Okay, so a happy Thanksgiving to those of you in America who are for whom it is Thanksgiving. Here, I assume you guys felt it as Thanksgiving less, besides the fact that we're giving you the evening off. I don't know. In Efrat, where I live, it's American enough. It does feel like Thanksgiving a little bit, but my wife is very upset about it because she is Canadian, and Canadians do not celebrate Thanksgiving at all, and they definitely don't celebrate American Thanksgiving. But happy Thanksgiving to those of you who are celebrating it in America. I normally get a chance to do Parents on Learning a little bit earlier in the year and meet parents a little bit that way. Some of you know the beginning of the year was a bit crazy for me. My wife and I had twins right at the beginning of the year. So I was exempt from giving this year until I knew that I could commit to it. Thank you. So until I knew I could commit to it. So now I am, I get to do the Thanksgiving Parents on Learning. Okay. So one of the things that we've been talking about in the last few weeks, especially since Rabbi Sacks passed away, was the importance of understanding that the Torah can and should be able to speak to broad issues that affect the world at large. Right? If the Torah is the most perfect text that God could have... Ezra, you're joining in person and on Zoom? Okay. I don't know why you're doing that. But if the Torah is the most perfect text from God and to how to run the world, so we should expect that it would have something substantive to say, to weigh in on the issues of the day. So, despite the fact that this is dangerous, I am following as Adam pointed out to me, an age-old custom that should probably be eliminated, which is discussing politics at Thanksgiving. So, you will forgive me all, I agree with you, we should never talk about politics at Thanksgiving dinner, but this isn't Thanksgiving dinner, this is Thanksgiving shear, and that's apparently exempt from this rule.
Isn't Torah considered
water? Okay, now we're getting too metaphorical. And I'm going to do it through a particular Agadah, a narrative portion of the, or non-halachic portion of the Talmud, of the Gemara. One of the things I've enjoyed most teaching here in my years at Migdal is Agadita, or the non-halachic parts of the Gemara, the philosophical parts, the stories, the biblical exegesis, all the things that appear in the Gemara that are not halacha. Trying to understand them, they're often overlooked, but I like to teach it, and specifically in the Masechtot, in the tractates that we're learning. So this actually appears at the end of one of the two Masechtot that we're learning here in Yeshiva, in Sota. I was planning on doing it later in the year, but we'll move it here. So the final, the late Brachim of Sota discuss the dramatic law of the Egla Arufa. Right, so what is the Egla Arufa? Someone? Yes, Yosef.
We find a corpse in the, I guess I'll say in the middle of nowhere, but sort of not really.
Okay, that's a good description. We find a corpse in the middle of nowhere, but not really. Okay, yeah, between two cities, but not in the inhabited parts of society. Very good. So we find a corpse there, and what happens?
We don't know what happened.
Very good. We don't know what happened, right? It is a... it looks like is your father also Chaim, or is that your uncle?
No, that's my brother.
Your brother. Well, your brother just joined. Welcome. We find a person who was killed in between two cities, and we don't know what happened. So we know there's a crime, but we don't have a criminal. Right? We don't have a criminal. We don't have a particular person we can punish. Right, that's the backdrop. And the Torah tells us the following in Source 1. Okay, I gave you the translation for anyone who wants it. All the main sources appear both in English and Hebrew. So, ki matzei chalal Ba'adama asher Adonai elecha noten lecha liwishta. Nofel basadeh. Lo noda mihikau. So if in Israel, the land that God gave you, you find someone killed in the open, and you don't know who killed him. So viyatzu zikeinecha v'shoftecha umadidu el ha'arim asher tzivodecha lal. So you have this very detailed, dramatic procedure. The sages, the courts, the elders, the rabbis with their long beards, or no beards, or whatever. Look, I'm a Talmud of Lichtenstein. Lichtenstein never had a beard. He just had, you know, very intense sideburns. But the rabbis come, and they measure to the closest city. So then, you have this act of penitence, right, to atone for the blood. So you take an animal which had never been worked, and you take down the elders take it down to this valley, which this wadi, which has never been worked, and they break its neck from the back. Okay? That's dramatic enough. And all the commentaries try to figure out why is this the response to murder without a criminal. The Rambam suggests that we do this whole very strange procedure because it'll encourage, everyone will be talking about it. We encourage the gossip, and if everyone is gossiping about what we did, so that might lead to us finding the murderer. Yes?
Why does it matter that it's like an unworked animal?
Good, so you haven't gotten there yet, but the Gemara says that you do it with an animal that never worked, in a field that's never worked, to symbolically indicate that this person's life was cut short, so now he can no longer produce. He can't produce mitzvot, he can't produce children, and we symbolize that with an animal that's never produced in a field that can't produce. Right? So that's the imagery that Chazal see here. But then it gets weirder. Right? And this is what our starting point is going to be. The elders of the town come, and they put their hands on the Egla Arufa, and what do they say in Pasuk Zayin? V'anu v'amru yadeinu lo shafchu et adam hazeh v'eineinu lo ra'u. The sages say, we did not murder this person. We did not spill his blood. Now, all of you should have the same question that Chazal had, which is,
I don't see a rabbi with a long flowing beard being Jack the Ripper.
Yeah, okay, that was a very illustrative way of saying it, but yes, right? Is that if you had to guess who the murderer was, Yes, fine. If you had to guess who the murderer was, it was probably not the elders of the city. It was probably not the Rosh of Beit Din. Yes, I know. There are places in Tanakh that but fine. Okay? That's the problem that Chazal want to deal with. And it's through the treatment of this strange line that I want to open our discussion. So here's the framing of our discussion. Surprisingly, even though the courts, even though the leaders, the government officials, the political order is not directly responsible for this crime that has no identified perpetrator, the Torah indicates that they have to say that they are innocent, which implies what? Right? That there's an assumption of guilt, that they did something wrong. And here is where Chazal, through the Agadotas, and this is one of those wonderful Agadot, where the Yerushalmi, he does it sometimes, actually tells you that they had an ongoing dispute between the sages of Eretz Yisrael, of Israel, and those in Babylonia. They all sat down and looked at these psukim and said, okay, the political order, the political religious leadership has to say they're not guilty, which means that you might have thought they were guilty. In what way were they guilty? But what question, before we look at the sources, what question are they, what are they really getting at? What is the heart of the issue that they are dealing with? And this is why, against my better judgment, I'm going to talk about politics. Yeah, what are they, yeah, Natan, I can always count on you. Good, yes.
The obligations of the leaders to the people.
Okay. So, Chazal see in this an implication that it must be that the implied obligations of the leaders, of the politicians, of the rabbis, whoever you want to put in this, their responsibilities towards society should in some way express themselves in a way such that if they carried out their duties properly, you would not expect there to be this crime. But there are two very different reasons why you might have thought they were responsible. So Yehonadan already picks up on one possibility, which is that where did Chazal see the implied responsibility? Towards who?
The community.
Or in other words, in this particular case, more narrow.
The people in the community. The people
even more narrowly. But yes, what? Yes, the victim. Right? Meaning the victim. Right? That Chazal could look at this and say, there's a crime here. And at some level, if there's a crime and there's a victim, the government, the leaders, have to own up to the fact that they are meant to protect potential victims. Okay? But how do you protect potential victims? How do you protect, yeah?
You offer help when they ask for it?
Ah, so there's two ways of doing that. Right? There's two very different ways of this. And this is where we start to get political. I'm going to make a disclaimer, though, despite the fact we're talking about politics. I don't want to take sides. Okay? I want to show you how the Torah can be brought to bear on political issues. Okay? As we know, in addition to this pandemic that has driven us all crazy for the last... Yeah, I don't even know anymore, right? I don't know. I was emailing with someone, and he's like, normally I would say, I haven't seen you in a year, it feels like just a few days. But it's not true. I haven't seen you in a year, and it feels like decades, right? So however long this has taken, okay? However long we've been in this pandemic nightmare. What? 9 months? Yeah, I'm telling you. It's like, I told you, my mother was called back to work. I never, ever thought the day that I would see the day when after my mother retired from epidemiology, they would call her back to be an emergency epidemiologist. And I'm telling you, literally, for years, every year, New York City has these, like, mock epidemic drills, which my mother was involved in. And every year, my mother would tell me, it didn't go well. Many people died. And I'm like, this is not going to be, you know, like, it was very rare that it was totally successful because it was miscommunication. So I was sort of dreading this. And then, you know, like, years of growing up on this, right? What? My God. Well, look, I've been traumatized since my mother worked on the anthrax scares in 2001. Okay, anyways. But besides the pandemic, so with everyone being home and everything... Everyone already stressed out. So, in the summer, in addition to the medical issues, there was political unrest that exploded in America. Okay? Exploded. Over what people viewed as unjustified killings of, well, it started with one, and then it, right, George Floyd, and then it continued, right? And it led to protests and counter-protests and violent protests and crackdowns by the police. And suddenly there was a conversation going on in society about, okay, if there's crime, right, and there is wrongdoing by the government officials, by people in society, right, we need to figure out, obviously everyone shares a little bit of the blame. Right? No one's perfect in this story. But what's the best way to tackle a situation like that? So there were some people who said, the best way to deal with it is, if there's crime in society, what do? Crack down on society, be stricter. Right? If there's crime, the only solution is to be even stricter. Right? And then there was a counter movement that said,
Defund the police.
Defund the police. And what did they, right? And what was the Svara? Again, I'm not taking sides. I want to describe, right? Defund the police. So what did at least some of the people who wanted to defund the police say they wanted to do? Okay, there were the anarchists, very good. Yes. This is why it's dangerous to talk politics. And then there were the people who said that's not what we mean. We don't mean totally defund the police. What do we mean?
Just use their funds like to help the community.
Correct. Is one way of stopping crime is by cracking down on crime directly. The other way is by redirecting funds in such a way that you don't create criminals or you protect the vulnerable, which are two different things. Right? And this was the conversation that was happening. It was very heated, right? But this sugya actually gives you a little bit of an insight into what Chazal are thinking. Because here you have a crime. You have murder, right? And no one can really put their finger on who did it and what the direct cause was because there's no known criminal. If there's a known criminal, then who is fundamentally responsible? The criminal. But when there isn't a criminal, it forces society to take a broader picture because you can't blame it on any particular individual. Right? So Chazal say, oh, at this moment, when there's no particular criminal and you're reflecting more generally on how do I deal with the fact that there was a crime and there was a victim, and the Torah says that the leaders have to say, Yadeinu lo shafchu adam hazeh, that we aren't responsible, that implies that they are. So now they start thinking, well, in what way are they? Right? We didn't protect the victim, but in what way could we have protected the victim? Yes, Yonatan.
So if we're saying that here in this case that there's a responsibility on the society because society kind of pushed the criminal into this...
I didn't say anything yet. I said that this is the conversation that the Gemara wants to have. And what I want to do is read the Gemara, the Mishnah, the Bavli, and the Yerushalmi, and I want you to see how the Gemara is presenting two very, and then we'll see with Rashi, three very different ways of thinking about the way in which society is responsible to protect people from crime.
But if you're saying, if you would say that...
Okay, if I would say, I have not said anything yet, okay, yes.
If you would say...
Don't pin anything on me, okay? By the end of this, I don't want anyone angry at me, or... I have two options. Either by the end, no one should be angry at me because I fairly present all positions, or everyone is angry at me because I fairly present the positions and you think I shouldn't be fair to the other side. I'd rather the former, okay? But don't pin anything on me, okay?
So if you say that society is able to put someone in a position where they become criminal, then why would it require this case where the responsibility is at least partially on society and not fully upon... And in other cases where you actually know the criminal, why is the... responsibility fully on the criminal.
When there's a known criminal, why is it fully on the criminal?
Yeah.
So I don't know if it is, right? Meaning it could be that even in a case where there's a known criminal, there's also other, there's other responsibility to go around. But there, where there's a clear address to deal with it, right, your primary responsibility has to be that. It doesn't mean that there isn't other things going on, but when there isn't an identifiable criminal, there's only the broader questions to ask because you don't know who to punish. You don't know what to do. Yes, Ezra.
Also, I know, with murder, a group of people kill someone. They're not collectively. They're not each individually responsible. Like Al Pi Adin,
correct. I mean, Ezra is also correct that when it comes to actual technical punishment in Bezdin, we're very limited in terms of what it means to commit a crime. Right? It's the person, the single person is responsible for the crime. Yes. Whereas here, we're talking at the broader level. Right? And it, because there isn't a... we're not limited in the same way because there isn't a person we have to punish. Right? Okay. So let's look. Okay? So the Mishnah tells us as follows. Zikneota Yer, source 2. Right? Zikneota Yer, Ruchatzinati Dehen B'mayim, B'makom Arifa Shel Egla. The elders come and they wash their hands and they say, we're not guilty. It wasn't us who spilled the blood. And now the Gemara asks everybody's question. Thank you, Yitzhak, for the excellent pictures. You really thought that the heads of the Beit Din were murderers? Ella shelo ba liadenu. V'lo ri'inu v'hinachnuhu b'lo levaya. He didn't come to our hands and we sent him away without food. We didn't see him and send him away without being escorted. Now, one second. First things first. Is the girsa in the Mishnah as we have it the correct girsa in the Mishnah?
I'm guessing probably not because here it's in parentheses and Yerushalmi just doesn't have
Very good. The answer is no. It is absolutely not. Because as you'll see, the Mishnah, as I just read it, reflects the tradition of the Bavli. Right? But if you look at the Mishnah as I gave it to you in number 3, this is a probably a better version of it, where on that line it says, this is number 3, Shelo bal yadenu upatranuhu v'lo ra'inu v'inachnuhu. We didn't see him and let him go. We didn't have him and let him go. We didn't see him and leave him alone. But it doesn't say what that means. Right? This without food, without escort. It doesn't appear in the Mishnah. Right? Why does it not appear in the Mishnah? Because it's a machloket. The Bavli and the Yerushalmi, the two Talmuds, dispute what this line means. Yes, Yonathan?
What would happen if they did? If they did, like, see him or something? If they did, like...
Then they would not be able to say this. Because they were responsible.
What would happen if they
didn't? They wouldn't do Egla Rufa. Because they couldn't, in good faith, say that we are innocent.
But it doesn't say that. It doesn't say that only if they.
Excuse me.
Like,
yes. Yes, Roger.
Does it mean that? Does it mean we didn't see him, or does it mean, we didn't see him and we didn't see him and send him away empty-handed? It means we saw him and we gave him some food.
Right. So it sounds. Right. It could be either. Right. It's not clear in the Mishnah. Right. It could be that we didn't see him at all, or we did provide him with food. Either way, we didn't. Right, it's not clear from the Mishnah which one it is. Right, it could go either way. Correct. Right, meaning there is that ambiguity. Right, so either we didn't have the opportunity to take care of him, or we did take care of him. But here the question is: okay, the Bavli and Yerushalmi look at this Mishnah and they say, "But what does it mean?" And I want you to listen. Here's what I want you to do, and here's what I don't want you to do. Okay. I want you to listen to resonances in the Gemara that can help us shape a conversation about the political situation in America. I don't want you to conclusively pin the Bavli and the Yerushalmi on a political position and then use that to vilify the other side. I want you to understand that the Gemaras here are having a conversation, right? That is important, okay? Are we okay with this? Okay? I'm trying. I know, it's politics, so it's dangerous, but I want to try because I think it's important to see the ways in which Torah can speak. Again, I don't think it's in a black and white, Dafka, I'm showing you a dispute, but I want to see how the conversations that Chazal had can weigh in on the values we should be thinking about when we think about broad political issues. So here's the Bavli. Okay? So in number 4, the Bavli tells us, "Va'amar yadenu lo shafchu adam hazeh, ve'einenu lo ra'u, v'chi al libenu alta shebeidin shofchei damim hein." Do we think that the judges were murderers? Ela lo bal yadenu patranu b'lo mizonot, v'lo ri'inuhu v'hinachnuhu b'lo levaya. We didn't see the victim and let him go without food and without escort. And from here, Rabbi Meir jumps off and says, Tanya Rabbi Meir Omer Kofin Lilivaya. If someone is in a city and he's leaving, we coerce you. All the guys in my share are like, yes, we've learned about coercion and mitzvahs. Yes, we coerce people to escort the people out of the city. And what's the proof? Yonatan, what's the proof?
Shoftim.
Yes, the dramatic story is at the end of Shoftim. Okay. Oh, sorry. Beginning of Shoftim. This is the beginning. From the beginning of Shoftim, where he says, "Show me the entrance to the city." Okay. So, the Bavli says that first of all, when we see the victim, and we have to acknowledge that we had some part in this crime or deny it. Right? What type of responsibility does the Bavli see here? Right, what shapes the... Yes?
I have a question.
Yosef first.
The Bavli say is the community has a responsibility to, I guess, like, provide for the person and, like, ensure that, like, every... has, like, to actively go out and make... I guess, like, provide for the person and, I guess, ensure that he has, I guess... food.
Okay, good. Right, so Yosef says the best way to make sure that people are taken care of in society and not become the victims of crimes are to take care of the victims. Okay? At the very simple level, what does that mean? In what way would giving food or escort to the person have prevented this crime? Rami.
I mean, I guess if they were...
I don't want you to give me Rashi yet. I just want you to give me a simple shot. Yes.
Okay, so, I mean, if someone's hungry, then they're obviously more willing to engage in risky things. And then they're at more risk of getting to a situation where they are going to...
Very good. Okay, so I'm going to reframe what Rami said slightly and tell me if you hear any political resonance, okay? If we don't take care of the poor... and give them enough food, then they will have no choice but to engage in risky activity. Okay, does anyone hear any political resonance there? Any, that, yes, yes or no question. What? What? So give me an example of that type of argument in the last few months in politics. Give me an example. I'm not going to assume that anyone's taking a side. I want you to think about it. Yaakov.
Instead of spending poor people of the inner city community aren't so desperate and don't resort to crime as
well. Okay, no, you're getting to Rashi. I knew you were going there. No, hold it. Yaakov's Rashi. I'm going to come back to you. Don't give me Rashi yet. You're doing Rashi. Very fancy. It's Rashi, but wait. Give me not Rashi. Yes, Yaakov. Yes, Joseph.
Honestly, I'm not sure about my question because the one hand you're showing
me saying... No, answer my question. Don't jump ahead. My question. No. You're going to Yerushalmi, Ezra. Ezra, no, you lost your chance. You went to the Yerushalmi already. Come on.
Immigrants from like Latin America, economics causing someone to do something illegal. The fact that they're
stop
not
illegal. Very simple. Come on.
I mean, oh, what do you mean by immigrants?
Yes, Yotam.
If you are poor, then you're more likely to commit crimes.
No. God, all of you are jumping to Rashi. You are all so shaped by the last few months. My God. No, okay, very simple, okay? Let me give you an example in modern politics, not from the crime case, okay?
Right.
Easy. We should be providing a better social welfare net so that the poor hairdressers don't have to risk their lives and risk corona by going out and... right? Being hairdressers even in the middle of a pandemic. Okay? Right? Have you heard this before? Right? You've heard this. Okay, I'm not telling you whether you agree or not agree. Right? But there is this argument that if you want to protect potential victims from anything, not just from crimes, right? From anything, what you should do is make sure that they don't have to risk their lives to survive. Right? Let's give an example from crime. Okay? This is not one that's particularly been in the news recently. But let me give you a theoretical of what this might look like, okay? And Yotam, you'll tell me if this is true to what you said. But I think it would be, right? If you don't give people a living wage, they're going to have to take extra long shifts, which might mean that they'll have to take the subway late at night when no one else is on the subway, when it's less safe and then they might get hurt. Okay, something like that. More or less, I don't know, right? Or if you don't give people food to eat, right? And the only way they can get it is by going to work and they have no car and it's freezing outside. I don't know, come up with something, right? Or they have to work in dangerous neighborhoods, right? We all know that we are willing to take more risks when we're desperate. So in the Gemara's case, if the guy had a good meal in the old city, where someone had walked him from that city to the next city, right? he would not have been running, starving at night from one city to the next, which, right, maybe not being careful enough on which roads he took, and he wouldn't have gotten killed. Okay? Can we agree that that is a plausible construal of the argument that the Gemara is making? Okay, now everyone is like exploding on me already. Yes, okay. Go.
I was saying, it's, the policy is you're both saying you give him food and you also do protection, so it's not...
Correct. You take care of him in two ways. One is you provide him with food, the other is you protect him. Right? So yes, in the model discord, it might be, don't make them desperate such that they engage in dangerous activity. Or, right, if they're going to, right, so make a law that if your worker is there past midnight or past 11, you have to pay for a cab from the, and get home if you live in a high crime area where public transportation is dangerous. I don't know. Come up with something like that. Right? I don't know. Okay?
Include the escort. Like, it's not just... It's
yes. Low. Okay. Fine. That is, I think, a plausible read of the Bavli. I was going to go to the Yerushalmi, but everyone's exploding on me already with Rashi. Rashi had a very different understanding of the Bavli. Yaakov, what did... Where'd Yaakov go? He's blocked by Ezra's elbow. Okay, Yaakov. Yaakov, you are a Rashi Jew. And you, and if you don't hear political resonance in Rashi, then you have not been listening to the news. I'm not saying you have to identify with this, but you definitely haven't been listening. So good, Yaakov, why don't you tell me what Rashi says? How does Rashi understand the Bavli? Yeah. Say it again. You said it correctly before. But tell me, how does Rashi understand the Bavli?
People don't have food and other essentials in life. They will resort to crime.
And then what will happen to them?
And, well, then they'll become criminals.
Yeah, but you're missing a step.
And then they'll die.
And then they'll get hurt. Right? This is, okay, I'm going to read Rashi, and I want, by show of hands, how many people, after I read Rashi, hear some political debates going on, okay? Raise your hand, that's all. Rashi. Lo ba li adeno petrenu. What does it mean? Number 6. Bigemara mifareish. Below mizonot, v'hainu lo yadenu lo shavchu. We didn't not give him food. Lo neherag al yadenu, which means he wasn't killed by us. Meaning, shepatranu below mizonot. We didn't let the victim go without food. V'hutzrach l'lastem in abriot, which led to him trying to steal food. V'al kach neherag, and that's how he was killed. Now, I'm going to reread Rashi. I'm not going to read it. I'm going to paraphrase Rashi, and then I want you to raise your hands if you've heard someone say this argument.
Yeah,
Les Mis. 1 second. Yes, Les Mis. Very good, Les Mis. But let me read Rashi. I'm not going to quote Les Mis yet, but let me paraphrase Rashi. If somebody is forced into petty crime out of desperation, and that puts him in a situation in which he gets killed from violent crime, that's society's fault for putting that person in that situation of desperation. Now, for Rashi, the victim here is a criminal. Are we agreeing on this? For Rashi, this is what he's saying. The person killed was not someone who was starving and therefore was leaving the city and just didn't get on the right road, or took the subway late at night when no one was there because he had nowhere to eat and he was cold. And that's not it. The victim for Rashi is someone who society didn't take care of, and he needed food, so he was walking aimlessly looking for food. He saw somebody who had food, and he went to rob him just to survive. And what did the victim of the victim do? Kill him in self-defense. Right? He killed him in self-defense. And the court comes and says, if that happens, whose fault is that?
Society.
Society's. Why? Because by not taking care of the poor, we drove them to desperate petty crime, right? Or like low-level offenses, which forced them into a society which is more dangerous, and they got killed. Now, before you ask me questions, raise your hand if, in the last few months, you've heard people say, it may be true that X, Y, and Z was a criminal. It may be true that they committed crimes, but the situation they got into was because they were desperate, and the violence or their death, right? Even though they did commit crimes, the violence that ended up facing that when they met their death was uncalled for, right? I know I've heard people say this, right? Meaning, if you think about some of the debates happening in America, people said, right, why are you yelling at the police for the murder of George Floyd? He was a criminal. And what's the response? And again, I'm not taking sides, but I want to get into their heads. What's the response?
He wasn't.
Well, they'll say he had committed crimes, whether he was at this moment or not. Right? But what, even if they acknowledge that, what will they say?
It's still murder.
It's still murder, and
society forced them.
Yeah, meaning, right? Yeah, but what you should be doing is not just saying, well, he committed some crimes. You should be asking the question, why did he get into this situation of these crimes that created a situation in which the police expected him to be violent? Right? I mean, even if you think that the person, right, even if you think that the police didn't mean to kill him, why do you create a situation where certain minority populations end up doing more crime, which creates a cycle where the police fear them, which means that they use violence against them, right? You've heard arguments like this, right, of variant forms, right? Rashi is making some sort of argument like that, right? That even if the person who gets killed is a criminal, meaning they violate low-level crimes, if the reason they do that is because they were desperate, then when society reacts with violence against them, even though they were breaking the law, society is responsible for creating the backdrop of desperation. Right? That is how Rashi reads the sugya. Yes? Are we agreed? That's how Rashi reads the sugya. Right? And I gave you, Rashi says it in several places. Let me just read the next two sources. Give me 1 minute. Rashi in number 7 says the same thing in Lamed Chet. Klomar lemezonot hutrach velo hayelo vira echad nosei bin zonot uval chodfam mimenu laonis ra'avon v'amadze ala v'harago. He was starving to death. He saw somebody with food. He grabbed it and the guy killed him in self-defense. Right? Tosef Yantif. V'hutrach l'lastem in abriot. L'kach ne'arak. Very simple. We didn't give him food. He had no choice but to steal. That's what led him into a situation where he got killed. Right? That's Rashi and Tosfot Yom Tov. Okay. I want to make sure we get to the Yerushalmi, so very quickly. Yosef, Ezra, Yehonatan, quickly. Yes?
So, if this whole thing is that, like, this guy was killed in self-defense because he tried to steal from someone, why...
Fine. Unjust. It was... My guess is that it wasn't really self-defense. The guy wasn't trying to kill him, so you can't kill him in response. Right? Meaning, self-defense, meaning he was being stolen from, but his life wasn't in danger. Right? Therefore, he's not allowed to kill, and therefore it's still murder. Right? I assume that's how we'll view it. Right? Because you can only kill someone if your life is in danger, not if someone's trying to take your money, not in your house. In your house, you can. Right? It's Bob Machter. Only at night. Right? Very complicated. Fine. Ezra.
It seems like this is food, which I feel like extrapolating to other, like, economics beyond food is not necessary.
Okay, good. So Ezra points out, and this is what I said before, don't try to directly map our Gemara onto modern politics. Because you could say, that's just food. Someone's literally starving in the street, right, and you need a Robin Hood. So yeah, that's a situation where, like, you're responsible for the violence that happens against them. Fine. Right? But if they have food and they just, you know, feel disenfranchised, or they don't feel like they're high enough on the totem pole, or they have food, but they feel like there's unfair wealth inequality, right? Then that's not what the Gemara is talking about. You're right, Ezra. Meaning, you could look at the Gemara and say, it's true that the Gemara thinks that if people commit crime out of desperation, at some level that's society's fault. But maybe that's only when they're so desperate they're starving to death. But society isn't responsible to deal with wealth inequality. You're right. You could look at the Gemara and say this. Right? Like I said, I don't think that you can look at our Gemara and easily map it directly onto the modern debate and say, Rashi Paskins like the whatever, right? Like, by Black Lives Matter. That's not how things work, right? But, so, before I see the Yerushalmi, let me ask you the question, okay? Again, by show of hands. How many people think that even if we don't make audacious claims, that you can easily map the Gemara, Rashi, Yerushalmi, onto specific political views? How many people think that at least reading this sugya and thinking about the questions it's dealing with will help us shape our thoughts about what's going on in society with a little bit of Torah insight? How many people think that even without the ambitious goal of paskening the modern political debates, reading this with an eye towards political debates will at least give us some Torah insights to help us shape our own views? How many people think that? Only Ezra. I have 1.5 views. Now I feel like I failed. Right? Okay. What?
I feel like this maps onto both.
Okay. So that, is it yes or a no?
I'm saying it doesn't fit with either, so it wasn't really, it's like, you're saying...
I don't want it to map on. I'm saying, will it help provide language for the conversation?
Yes.
Okay. That's my modest claim. Before we say anything, I want to see the Yerushalmi. Let me get the Yerushalmi out, Yonatan. Come on, I want at least I need to read the Yerushalmi. What?
It's a very quick question.
Okay.
How does Rashi deal with the escort? Like, what does he say the escort is there for? The whole idea is to not...
If he was, right, if he had been escorted, right, so then it wouldn't have happened, right? If he was with someone, so then the person wouldn't have killed him, right? Because, I don't know, right, when there's two people...
The escort is like for society protection rather than like a person. Yeah,
or both, right? I mean, you could take it in different directions. No, I'm going to read the Yerushalmi. What?
It's your response to it.
Yes, Ezra.
It's not talking about the same case.
You're not going to let me get the Yerushalmi.
There's a possible case that someone just like...
Yes!
And then there's a different case in which he was forced to crime.
Okay. The Yerushalmi, though, has a different perspective. The Yerushalmi says, Rabbanan dehacha patrein krai behoreg. They say that the rabbis here in Israel interpret this pasuk with regards to the murderer. V'rabbanan d'taman patrein krai b'neherag. And in Bavel, they think it's talking about the victim. So we already saw the Bavli. But the Yerushalmi says, Rabbanan d'hacha, how do the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael understand this Gemara? Patrein krai b'horeg. Shlo ba al yadenu patranu v'lo haragnu. We didn't see the potential criminal and crack down hard enough. Right? This is what Yerushalmi says. If we saw someone who looked like he was, right, if there was a murderer and we didn't punish him, then if he goes out and kills again, it's our fault. Right? The solution to crime in society is better enforcement of the law. And therefore, if someone gets killed, it's because, and that murderer had been let free, that criminal had not been, we had not exacted justice against him, that's our fault. That's on us. Right? We didn't see him, we didn't, right, hold back, we didn't stutter in judgment. V'rabbanan d'taman patrein krai b'neherak, lo ba'al yadenu patrein b'lo halvaya, v'lo reinu v'nachnu b'lo parnasa. Right? And in Bavel, it's slightly different than we have it in the Bavli. We didn't see the victim and give it, and right, it flips, which is Levaya, which is Mizonot, but we didn't see him and let him go without escort and without food. So now, we have three views in play. Hold questions for a minute. Okay? We have a Gemara. We have a crime and a victim. With no direct criminal. So now society is reflecting on their responsibilities, and we have essentially three views. Okay? Yerushalmi's view is if there's crime in society, what is the solution? Just answer the questions. Don't squeeze in. No squeezing in your own opinions yet. No. I need a minute. I need to just get them clear. Then you can ask. Then you can challenge. I know you love to challenge. Let me get these out in just clearly. Okay. Yerushalmi. If there is a crime, right? If there's crime in society, what is the best way that society can deal with it? Crackdown harder on crime. Whereas I just got from Ayala Cohen, better enforcement of the law. Yes, right? Better enforcement of the law. Right? So now, if you translate into the modern view, wait, there's crime in society? Why would you defund the police? Right?
No, defund the police because you're showing them part of the way up.
Right?
No.
Yes!
No. Right? It's enforce the law better. Right? And law enforcement. Right? Make sure... Yes.
If the crime is coming from the police, that means you need to police...
Yes, I understand. Yes. Then you... Right? Correct. And the answer might be enforce the law against the police. Sure. Right? If the crimes are coming from the police, then enforce the law against the police. But according to Yerushalmi, our first inclination is if there's a problem in society with crime, the best way to solve it is through... Right? Is through better enforcement of the law. Right? This is, for example, the theory of... This is how... Right? This was the theory that Giuliani carried out when he was mayor of New York. Right? The broken windows theory. Right? Is if there's crime in society, the best way to prevent big crime is... Is to stop all crime, even little crime. Right? Because if you stop little crime, right, and you make sure that there's a rule of law in society, then people won't get hurt. Okay? 1 second. Then you have the simple read in the Bavli, which is, if there's crime in society, so one way of dealing with that is what? Is making sure that the poor people are not in a dangerous situation, right, or... Very literally, the people who don't have food, right, don't feel desperate enough that they have to enter into dangerous situations. Right? And then there's Rashi's twist on the Bavli, which is society should make sure that people don't basically aren't forced to enter gangs where their lives are at risk simply because that's the only way they can get their basic needs met, right? Is don't create a situation which people are desperate enough that they have to be involved in petty crime to survive, because inevitably, right, that will lead to them getting hurt in the process of committing these petty crimes, right? Now, Ezra is correct that the Gemara is actually very limited. The Gemara tells us specifically if someone's starving to death. So, would the exact same thing be true if the claim in society wasn't the poor don't have food, but there's wealth inequality? Or they don't have, you know, enough money, or they feel disenfranchised, or the system is against them, or all the things that you hear in conversation? Maybe yes, maybe no. Right? We don't know. Right? The Gemara is limited. But I think it's at least productive to notice, right, that according to the Bavli, at the extremes at least, one way of taking care of victims is by making sure that they're not desperate and don't put themselves in dangerous situations. We can have a frank discussion about how much are we expected to give them to make them not desperate. Is it only food, and then after that they can make whatever decision they want? Or is it enough for food and shelter, right? Or food and whatever. We can have that conversation, right? But the Bavli is definitely framing this discussion as, what can you do to make sure that victims aren't desperate? So that they don't end up in dangerous situations. The Yerushalmi is saying, if there's crime in society, again, maybe this is only murder, right? Maybe this is only at the extremes, fine. But the Yerushalmi is providing a model in which when there's problems in society, the right way to deal with this is to crack down on crime. And Rashi presents an interesting different model, which is, if society creates a situation in which people, by desperation, are forced to enter into petty crime, the violence that ends up happening against them is society's fault, even though they are acknowledged criminals. Right? Rashi is quite radical. Rashi says that even if someone is admittedly a criminal, they violated some laws, if they were forced into that crime by desperation, and then they get hurt, not proportionate to the crime that they committed, That's society's problem, not theirs. Right? That's Rashi. Okay, and again, 100 qualifiers. Maybe that's only desperation for food, right? Would it apply in modern society? Is it the same when? Wealth equality, right? Whatever, you know, inequality. What happens, as Ezra said, when the police are part of the problem? How does this change the calculus here, right? Or, as Yosef keeps saying, do you look at Levaya not as... Do you look at Levaya as maybe part of the police system, right? Maybe we're looking at this wrong. Maybe Levaya is saying, right, maybe what you should look at it is, the Yerushalmi is saying you should enforce laws. And the Bavli is saying is you should make sure that they have more police patrols, right? Maybe that's what Levaya means, right? That the right way is not to enforce laws, but it is to make sure that, right, that there's more protection in society, not by providing for their needs, but providing literal protection. You're right, Yosef. So maybe Levaya is yet another angle here, right? That what we should say is, well, if people are getting hurt, we should increase police patrols. Maybe, right? I don't want to, right now, say, the Bavli says this shita is right, all right? Is this, right? I don't want to say, oh, Rashi is a Democrat, and the Yerushalmi is a Republican, and, right, I don't want to say that, right? What I want to show is simply, and then I'll take questions, because I don't know if we're going to get much farther than this, right, is that the Gemara here tells you that when there's a crime in society, the leaders take a moment to reflect, and it provides different models. Again, it may be extremes, but it provides a model that says one of the ways that we think about our responsibilities to lower crime is by enforcing the law. One is by making sure that people are taken care of and therefore don't end up in dangerous situations. And another model from Rashi is to make sure that is to recognize that even when people are engaged in petty crime, society has to recognize that there's a backstory and not just say, well, that person's a criminal, what do you want from my life? Rashi's answer is, well, why did they get there? You have to at least ask that question. You are responsible for asking, why did people end up as criminals? That may not exonerate them, but it doesn't exonerate society either. Right? And if anyone has been listening to politics over the last few months, you realize the fact that all these voices appear in the Bavli, Yerushalmi, Rashi, like we haven't even gotten fancy, right? Just Bavli, Yerushalmi, Rashi tells you that we could have a productive conversation and we could realize that all these voices have their place. We have to do all the work that Ezra is doing and Yosef is doing, which is, okay, but what exactly is it telling us? And is our case exactly the same? And what if it's not murder? And what if police are part of the problem? Or what if the question is whether police are part of the problem? And what exactly is Levaya? Does that mean protection? Does that mean, right, is that also part of the legal system, is protecting them, right? Or is that just being nice? What does that mean? Yes, that's all the right work, right? But the first step is to realize that you can have a complex conversation in which you recognize that each factor has some truth to it and should be brought to the table, right? That's the first step towards civil discourse. And to recognize that just looking at Gemara, Bavli, Yerushalmi, Rashi, we have been able to have this conversation. Yes, you're all Migdal guys. You're all smart and can draw distinctions and can tell me why this doesn't map on. I didn't say it did, right? But the fact that by reading this Gemara, it forced you to say, well, what does the Torah think? And does it speak to our situation? That question that you implicitly asked yourself, Ezra, right? That's the point of this shir. It's not to give you an answer. It's to tell you that if you read these sources with an eye toward the bigger questions, by learning Torah, it will force you to think more nuanced with a Torah perspective about issues. Right? I think you could plausibly come to different conclusions about what this tells us. But the fact that these texts should be brought into conversation and should help us have a nuanced perspective, I think that's a given. Okay, let me try to at least get through the Malbim. Because the Malbim doesn't think that there's really a machloket here. Right? The Malbim says, Beloshon HaKodesh Shemosh Lomit, Besota min v'anu alevim v'amru, Yodeinu lo shavchu, Perish, Shelo aynu groma laretzach hazeh, Lo yidei shenatnu mazon la rotzeach, vayidei kach haya muchrach laharoget on yirtzach, lashoket lachmo, lemalei nafsho kirav, v'lo yidei shelo netnu levayal on yirtzach, shelo yelech yechidi b'makom sakana. He says all of them are true, right? We didn't, right? He has a slight twist on it. He says, we didn't, the murderer was starving. We didn't create violent crime by creating a class of people who were desperate enough to kill. And we weren't derelict in our responsibilities to protect the victims. Right? So the Malbim splits the difference. He says, the Bavli and the Yerushalmi say, the focus is the murderer or the murdered. And the Malbim says, no. We say, we neither were responsible for creating the desperation that created the crime, nor were we derelict in protecting the victim. Right? So the Malbim integrates them. Right? It's not identical to Bavli or the Yerushalmi.
It seems like pure Bavli.
No.
Yeah. Isn't CEC just talking about giving Bavli and giving Leviah?
Yes, but...
And not even focus on the Yerushalmi identifying with the Neharag.
Okay, the Yerushalmi, according to the Yerushalmi, the Bavli thinks both phrases are about the victim.
Yes.
If you understand the Bavli the way the Yerushalmi did, then the Malbim is rejecting half the Bavli.
Yes.
Because the Bavli thinks both the Livaya and Mizonot are about the victim, and the Malbim says half this phrase is about the victim, half of it is about the criminal. A full meditation on our responsibilities towards society and why crime is happening needs to both take into account what society is doing that creates crime and what it does to protect the victims. That's the Malbim. Now, Yosef is correct that if you wanted to, you could get fancy and say that the Yerushalmi misunderstood the Bavli. Right? And that the Yerushalmi, misunderstood the Bavli. That the Bavli is not the position reflected in the name of the Chachmei Bavel by the Yerushalmi. That's in fact the position of Reb David Tzvi Hoffman, which was in the extra credit reading. Which was that the Bavli is one position, the Yerushalmi is another position, and the Yerushalmi's attribution of the position to Chachmei Bavel is yet a third position. But it's 7 o'clock. So that's going to be extra credit homework and I can't do it. But by the way, let me wrap up, okay? As I said at the beginning, the reason I chose this, even though I know you all are very political and everyone's very dangerous, and I don't know your parents yet because, you know, I haven't met most of them. Some of them I know, right? And I know talking about anything that in any way touches on politics is dangerous because everyone wants to see everything through their own lens and everyone wants to vilify the... I get it. That's what politics brings out in us. The reason I brought it is because I think that, again, as I said it in my eulogy for Rabbi Sacks, if we believe that the Torah is God's gift to the world, to guide us in the world, and there are major questions in society and vastly different approaches of how to deal with them, it would be pathetic of us, right, if we're really believing Jews, to think that looking at Torah couldn't at least help us sharpen the way we think about it, the types of values we need to bring into conversation. This machloket and agarata between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, with the nuances of Rashi and the nuances of the Malbim, where there's this attempt to balance society and recognize that part of what creates a functional society is a functioning legal system, is taking care of the people who are most likely to be desperate, is recognizing that sometimes crime is caused by desperation. Right? A holistic perspective, right, that is responsible, will recognize that all of those possibilities, all those values need to be integrated. And yes, as Ezra noted correctly, and Yosef noted correctly, this doesn't map on to the modern American case exactly. It doesn't. We have to, the nuances are important. But I still think it's important to look at the Torah, look at the Sugya, and realize, but it has something to say. It has a way, and in the end of the day, yes, everyone here got upset. No, you could understand it differently, you could understand it differently. And this is how I'll end. In politics, Often we don't do that. We look at the other side and say, you're just wrong. I'm right, you're wrong. There's only one way of looking at it. Suddenly we're talking about a sugya, and what are we all willing to do? Well, you could look at it this way, and you look at it that way, and I sort of hear what you're saying. There's a little bit of a nuance here. Maybe it's different, right? If we could look at the sugya, and that would encourage us to have the same nuance when we learn Torah as when we talk about politics, our political discourse would be a lot more substantive, a lot more civil, a lot more values-oriented, because we'd be willing, just like we are in a sugya, to say, here's one perspective. Right? Think what the Yerushalmi does. The Yerushalmi says, we learn it one way, Bava learns it the other way. These are two ways of looking at what's happening and our responsibilities towards society. If we can bring a little bit of the nuance the Torah brings out of us into the questions that are plaguing society, then hopefully we'll have a better conversation. The Torah will inspire us to improve the world in a more thought-out way, and not with the knee-jerk reaction that often comes when we're thinking about politics. Seeing it through the lens of Torah gives us that opportunity to integrate values in a nuanced way, in a complex way that sees different perspectives. Okay? So yes, after this year, I know, as soon as I turn off the recorder in the Zoom, 100 people are going to yell at me and tell me, but you could have had this nuance and that nuance and this nuance, and Bavli is different than Yerushalmi, and Reb Dov Tzvi Hoffman, this. Yes, 100%, you're all right. Right? My point was not to come to conclusions, it was to show you how looking at texts can speak to these values and help us have a values-driven, nuanced conversation. To remind ourselves of the conviction that God has something meaningful to say about the questions that are important in the world. Right? That's something I think we should believe, and sometimes we need a little bit of reminding. Okay? So I hope, despite the fact that I brought politics up on Thanksgiving, you'll forgive me. And hopefully everyone yelled at me and they got it out of their system here, and you're not going to Thanksgiving dinner, so you can yell at me and I can handle it. Okay? So it's a little bit more civil than that. At this point, I will turn it off. Hopefully I'll get to meet some of our wonderful parents in person. We are proud of all your sons.